So we tend to think of these early explorers as being people from a much different age and time than us, but in reality, a lot of us, some of us were alive at the same time some of these explorers were alive. So it wasn't that long ago, but it was at a time when a trip to, you know, the far reaches of the world would take months to get there instead of just hours. And to correspond with people, you had to, you know, send a letter by train or mule or boat or something like that. So it was a very different time. One of these early planet explorers who lived in the late 1800s, early 1900s was Niels Ebsen Hansen. And he was very loyal to the area where he was living in, which was northern part of the Midwest of the United States. And while many of these other planet explorers at the time went to the warm tropics to search for planets, he went north, particularly over to Siberia and so forth. The most interesting stories about Hansen don't involve necessarily the specific plants that he brought over, but sort of the character of the man and what he had to go through to obtain these plants. And so I want to focus most of my talk about this person's character and some of the interesting stories about him. As Rich says, that these stories and things you learn from the letters and all are really rich and informative. And I think, you know, give us a lot of inspiration for what, you know, the human soul can do. So Niels is credited with the development of 113 varieties of apples, crab apples, 72 varieties of plums and cherries. You can read this. Lots of grapes. Probably his biggest contribution was in the agronomic side, where he discovered some hardy alfalfas and introduced those. Anyone here of durum wheat? You know, he brought that over. Crested wheatgrass, which really transformed our prairie from something that was very poor land for grazing into something that animals could graze on. Proso millet, bromgrass, lots of ornamentals, and many unnamed selections of rubus, ribes, and fragaria. In total, he released over 400 varieties, including some sheep that he found over in Asia that he thought would be good over here. He had a collection at one point of 250,000 fruit seedlings and selections, which is second only to that of Luther Burbank in California. So he was quite the presence at that time. So our story begins in Denmark, where he was born. He was born to humble parents. Andreas, his father, was a painter of frescoes. All right, so he did, and his mother was Bodil, and she worked at home. Their first child died at 9 months of age, which wasn't that uncommon then. The second child was stillborn, and Niels was the fifth child, so he had two older sisters. Bodil died when Niels was 1.5 years old. So Andreas remarried, and Niels and his two sisters were raised by his stepmother, Katrina. When Niels was 7, they immigrated to New York City, where Andreas thought there'd be lots of work because New York City was booming. There must be lots of frescoes to paint in New York. So he came over here, and he did find some work here in New York City because there were a lot of, you know, rich people building mansions and all. He worked in the Philadelphia Centennial in 1886 and painted some frescoes for them. And then they asked him to come to Des Moines, Iowa, to work in a fresco at the Iowa State Capitol. So he was the one who painted this, if you're from Iowa. But no one told him that, you know, after the Capitol, there are not too many frescoes left in Iowa or the Midwest to paint. So the poor guy, you know, he's really talented, but he didn't really have a whole lot of work, but so he painted houses and didn't have a lot of money. And he didn't speak English, so he had a really rough time adapting to the United States. But Niels, he really, you know, picked up on languages and so forth. He completed 8 grade levels in 5 years and was a really smart kid. Then unfortunately, Katrina, his stepmom, died when he was 16. And so he had little money. So Niels dropped out of high school at grade 10 and began working. But he used his money that he made working to pay for Latin and German lessons. So can you imagine your teenage son working so he could pay for Latin lessons? He studied all these other subjects because he really wanted to go to college. And to top it off, he had a speech impediment, which made learning these languages even more difficult. But he also was infatuated with poetry. He wrote a lot of poetry throughout his entire life. In 1883, at the age of 17, Niels was accepted to Iowa State College. He was thrilled. He did really well in an entrance exam. So even though he hadn't really technically completed high school, they accepted him into Iowa State. Tuition that year was $4 a semester. And school closed between November and March because they couldn't keep that building heated. It was too cold. And the students slept upstairs and the classrooms were downstairs. But despite the low cost, Niels had to drop out of college after his first year. I mean, it just wasn't enough money. But I guess fortunately for him, his mom's estate was settled that year that he had dropped out. So then there was money the next year to go to school. And he is quoted as writing in some of these letters, quote, "Tomorrow I leave for Ames. Glory, hallelujah." So he was happy to go back to Ames. And he earned extra money while he was at Ames to pay his way through college by teaching recent Danish immigrants English. So he sort of did that English as a second language thing with the Danish immigrants, which were populating that area. So he graduated near the top of his class. He had the honor of having the best senior thesis, which is entitled Improvements of Fruits by Crossbreeding. And after college, he began working in a nursery. And he was really good at this job because his fluency in Danish, English, and German facilitated sales to all these immigrant farmers that came over. So he could talk to them in their own language and sell them things. And he was really doing great at this job at the nursery. And he wrote to his father at the time, quote, "Be of good cheer. It will be my greatest joy to help and support you in your old age, and your remaining years can be happy and carefree." His father was 61 at the time. In 1891, Niels was hired to work at Iowa Ag College under the supervision of Professor Budd, his thesis advisor. And he was hired to work on fruit crops and teach classes and write a handbook on fruit culture. He believed that doing science was also doing the Lord's work, and he wrote many poems about the sanctity of nature. While he was at Iowa State teaching, he kind of fell in love with his student, Emma, 8 years younger than him. And Emma was like from high society. She was smart and rich, and most women at that time majored in domestic studies. But Emma double majored in chemistry and botany. So she got a master's degree by the age of 22. And unfortunately for Niels, she rebuffed all his efforts and advances. There's one invitation you can see to a university function he invited her to, and she wrote in big letters with exclamation marks, "No, no, no." So, but Niels was persistent, and one of Niels' students was George Washington Carver, who happened to be real good friends with Emma. So Niels put some pressure on George to kind of like, "Can you fix this up here and invite us to some things together?" But, you know, George didn't have any luck either. So in 1894, Niels took his first trip to Northern Europe to learn about fruit production in a bunch of countries there and visit some experiment stations. And when he got back, he finished his master's degree, which is entitled The Crossbreeding and Hybridization of Native Fruits, a Study of Apples. And at that time, once he got his master's degree, remember, a lot of times, most people just got a master's degree. Most didn't go on for a PhD. So he was eligible for faculty positions. So he was offered two positions, Arizona State and South Dakota State. And he chose South Dakota State. He really wanted to work on hardy strawberries and raspberries. That was, at that point, that was his true love, and he wanted to develop those into commercial varieties. So he came in as chair of the horticulture department there, and then later was appointed head of the experiment station at South Dakota State. He planted lots of crops, and we saw those 250,000 varieties. He planted trees in tubs, would put them in a basement for winter, bring them out in the greenhouse so he could synchronize flowering, so he could make crosses with other apples. And he continued to court Emma by mail. Because remember, Emma was in Iowa, now he's in South Dakota. In 1897, President McKinley appointed this guy here, James Wilson, as Secretary of Agriculture. And James Wilson knew Niels, so they were kind of buddies. Wilson was really committed to bring science to bear on agricultural problems. And one of the first acts he did was ask Niels if he would go to Russia on an 8-month expedition and to find hardy plants for the United States. So Niels wanted to do that. So he wasn't married or anything. His attire was, they said, a billy club, a dagger, a revolver, binoculars, and a magnifying glass. And off he went to Siberia in search of plants. Now, you bring back seeds and stuff like that when you go on these collecting trips. And so you don't go in the spring and summer because there aren't any seeds then. You go in the fall and winter. So these guys would go to Siberia in the middle of winter collecting seeds from all these things. And he found hardy alfalfa, crested wheatgrass, red flesh apples, hardy melons, and a host of other plants. But he had to travel by horse cart when there was no snow and then by sleigh when there was snow. There were times when he found himself 1,000 miles away from any railroad. His crew got strep throat. They had frostbite, carbon monoxide poisoning. People died on the trip. But he did his job, and he brought back a bunch of seeds. In fact, 5 train car loads of seeds. And they had to go through the new section of foreign seeds and plant introductions at the USDA, which David Fairchild was heading up. And when David Fairchild got these 5 train loads of seeds, he quit. I'm not dealing with the Russian deluge. And to make matters worse, then the USDA offered the job that Fairchild had to Hansen. And Hansen said, no thank you, I don't want to live in Washington, I want to live in South Dakota. So he went back to South Dakota. Continued to write to Emma, hadn't given up on her yet. Many details of these trips are written in these letters that he wrote to Emma. And as Richard said, these are valuable for us now because we can see what he saw and what he recorded on those trips. He wrote to Emma's parents and said, come on, guys, help me out here. And she finally said yes, he would marry him under the condition her parents approved. So he wrote to Emma's father, quote, as you know, we college professors are seldom wealthy men. I have no fortune to offer Emma, but she is willing to keep house in the same modest fashion as customary to members of the faculty. So father said yes, and the same week that Emma accepted his proposal, which was like one of the happiest times of his life, his father died that same week, which was a big blow to Niels. After the marriage, he was offered a position back at Iowa State University, to which he responded, I wish those people in Ames would get over the notion, and I am desirous of going there. I am well situated in South Dakota. My experiments with native hardy fruits are by far the most extensive on this continent. This work is vastly more important than testing onions, cucumbers, and tomatoes, a work that every market gardener does better than any experiment station. So that's what he thought of that. So Niels and Emma had 2 children, and unfortunately, this guy put up with a lot. Emma died while she was pregnant with her 3rd child from appendicitis. And she was buried in her wedding dress. And coincidentally, Professor Budd, who he had worked for in his master's thesis, died the same day that Emma died. So these deaths were devastating to Niels. And so what Niels did was he married Emma's sister so that his 2 children would have a mother to raise them. Hansen went on 6 more trips to Russia and China, some of them 20,000 miles in length. And he suffered stolen luggage, starvation, cholera, epidemic, revolutions. Russia was undergoing tremendous angst at that time and fighting and revolutions and so forth. And he would skirt around the fighting and all to go and collect his plants. And he had just photographs of him doing these collections. Most of the time, he would pay the local people to go out and find these things for him because he wasn't exactly sure where they were. And he had a real good relationship with the locals. David Fairchild, on the left, you know, he never really liked Niels and vice versa. Fairchild accused Niels of not really collecting himself, but he just went to the University of Moscow and collected seeds at the university and brought them back. He didn't really go out into the wild to collect them, which isn't true from the photographic evidence, but that's what Fairchild accused him of. When Niels requested another trip in 1911, Fairchild said no and sent Frank Meyer instead. So Meyer went over there in the northern part, but Meyer didn't know the languages very well, so he didn't have a very successful collecting trip. At that point, Niels spoke seven languages, and he didn't have rapport with the local people, so that trip didn't go very well. And Meyer was particularly upset by a newspaper account in which he is quoted as praising Hansen. Right? He wrote to Fairchild, said, I didn't say anything that they mentioned there. It's pure invention. Meyer is credited with inventing the term fake news. Hansen had many differences with Fairchild and Meyer, which probably originated from the fact that if Fairchild and Meyer worked for the USDA, Hansen worked for South Dakota. So when Secretary Wilson retired, Fairchild wrote to Meyer. Hansen had the gall to get his friends to write to the new secretary urging him to fund yet another trip. The new secretary wouldn't fund Hansen anymore. But then the state of South Dakota said, well, if the federal government won't fund him, we will. And they got the money together to fund another trip. And then Meyer wrote to Fairchild, great Scott, how is this possible? Hansen was also invited to Russia by their government to come exploring and teaching. The Russians paid for it this time. And a lot of his work at that point had been translated into Russian. In 1929, Niels received the Wilder Medal, given by the American Pomological Society. In 1930 to 1934, the Dakotas suffered from depression, drought, tornadoes, dust storms, financial collapse, and grasshoppers. But Niels saw this as an opportunity to select for the most stress-tolerant of plants. Within a short time, South Dakota will be able to grow grapes equal to the New York and Michigan product, grow them on vast acres by the ton, despite blizzards and sub-zero temperatures. So he was very, you know, optimistic. His fruits, though, were widely promoted through the nursery catalogs at the time. The Gurney catalog featured all Hansen's berries and plums, a lot of discussion of Hansen's hybrids. Again, these were really promoted because, you know, he did cross them with these hardy material from China and Siberia and Russia and so forth, and then released those offspring that were quite a bit hardier than what people were used to seeing at the time. Professor Hansen is producing almost every year something that is an improvement over anything we've had in the past. Are you producing this fruit? If not, you're passing up some of the good things of life. Niels retired in 1937 at the age of 71. Shortly after that, South Dakota decided to cut most of the funding for fruit research. He continued to explore for new plants, but limited his forays to Canada. South Dakota discontinued all fruit breeding in 1960. Niels died in October at the age of 84. Silent Night was sung at his funeral. His monument says, there in the lower right, to leave the world a better place than I found it. The most important message for us today from the life of Hansen is really not to let life's curveballs prevent you from pursuing what you love and what you know will make the world a better place. Niels overcame all these challenges, and I was asking myself, have I overcome any one of those? And I don't think so. Funding, yeah, that's okay. Yeah. Ostracized by colleagues at USDA, maybe after this talk. Yeah. And finally, just to wind up, just to give you some more insight in his personality, I thought I'd share with you just not the whole poem, but just a little bit of the poem that he wrote after the Scopes monkey trial, where there was debate as to whether humans descended from monkeys and so forth. And he just couldn't believe that, as advanced as we were, we couldn't accept the theory of evolution. So he wrote this poem about the monkeys getting together to say, man is, to argue that, no, we're not related to man. We couldn't do all these terrible things that man does to himself. We monkeys are better. And so the jury was right in that trial, but from the sort of the opposite perspective. So we monkeys deny all kinship with and are better than man. Man claims descent from our noble simian ancestral tree. Man, the villain, is the black sheep of the monkey family. And so the whole thing is really fun to read. And some of my favorite hands and quotes: don't wave a college diploma over a field of tender plants and expect them to make be hardy. And lastly, a British reporter once asked him, why do you have to grow 1,000 plants to produce a superior variety? And he goes, because it took 1 million Englishmen to produce a Shakespeare. And so this is his motto: what we lost in the Eden of yore, we as gardeners seek to restore. Just want to acknowledge that these photographs were amazing find. His granddaughter wrote a book on him, and I was able to snag photos out of her family album, basically. And then Tom Shalin, who many of you know, is an avid collector of stuff, and when he heard I was talking about this, he purchased some South Dakota court reports from some flea market in California and shared those with me. And then there's an excellent archive of South Dakota photographs that a lot of these photos were derived from. So, thank you.